Does the toxicity of your body have prevented someone from going deeper into meditation? The alpha or delta?
When you lowering the speed of the brain down in order to focus the eyes, the experience, convex vision, or what we call third eye vision or clairvoyant vision, the degree of toxicity interference, because the minerals of that toxicity are going to keep firing, set up interference in the speed of the brain, so it's like grounding it. So it's like a radio. The more resistance you have, that's the electrical charge of growth. And the least resistance you have, the more charge goes to. So a person becomes a condenser when they clean up their body. And they become a resistor if they don't clean up their body. In the two speeds, from waking state of open eyes to the half-awake state of half-open, half-closed eyes. The delta is that frequency that is experienced when the body has minimal toxicity to offer resistance. So the earth is moving already on its axis 1 degree every 4 minutes. Delta level is already set to synchronicity in the brain for that. So most of us live with the notion that we are running the world. We have tremendous control over our environment without realizing how we are synchronized. And if that frequency goes off slightly, the first indication is schizophrenia. Now, finally you get what is called a deranged mind. There is no difference between a realized man and a schizophrenic in terms of internal awareness. They both see the same thing. But in the schizophrenic, he believes he can step in front of a moving car and stop it, only to be buried the next day. The realized man can stop him and stand in front of the moving car, and the car will not damage him. The driver may not even know what happened. There are many such incidences in people's lives. A good example is Dr. Lewis, who was a disciple of Yogananda. He and his brother and wife were driving from New England to California to see Yogananda. And they're coming across a bridge at night, a very narrow bridge that they only permit a car to go. And just about that time, when they're coming up, they count an 18-wheeler across the bridge. It was too late for them to stop at the speed they were going. In the this is Lotus talking the story. Her husband got her hand, and all she heard is the whole message. And she said she felt like a giant hand came, pushed the car right through. She felt the pressure of the 18-wheeler. And they're on both sides of the bridge to this day. Understand how they got through. The car is smashing. They went back later to that bridge and observed it's not possible for the side of the car to pass through and an 18-wheeler come through the same time. They arrived safely at California. Never made any remark to anybody. They know something. And so one day, Dr. Lewis is walking along by the lake up here in California. And Yogananda's coming along, a mound of flowers. And he looks up. He says, "Hello, doctor. Do you like your drive across bridges these days?" Oh, the remark he made to him. The doctor realized he had known what was going on. Then, at another time, he was trying to meditate, he said, he was trying to get down to the Delta. Couldn't get into that state, so he was by the shrine down by the lake, and he was out on the boat paddling, and he slipped in. He reached for something and he fell over in the water. And he lost his glasses, swam into spin. He realized he was going down. Second time, first time, second time, third time. And he couldn't see very much. All you can repeat, well, it's all your fault, Master. And I felt like somebody pick him up like a little baby. He felt like that to the back of his shirt, picking him up and moving him to the side of the edge of the lake, so he could reach him and then push himself on the front. Made no remark, nobody. And this went on for about 6 months. One day, he's down by the temple there, and he's busy helping water plants. And so the Yogananda comes along. And I said, "Hello, doctor." He says, "Still learning how to swim these days?" I love how you talked. So I wanted to meet him to learn how to meditate so I could make bracelets. So when we met, you know, and he looked at me, he said, "You can't stay 5 minutes in Delta, forget about it. Don't come back." Imagine me trying to stay in Delta. I thought I really could get down there, you know. He says, "Because it takes a minimum 10 to 15 minutes to work in it, let alone sticking." I tried, and then finally, when I learned the techniques from him, I stayed down in Delta, slow my brain down. Then I understood why all these men were what they were. They weren't magicians. There is no magic in God. But there are tremendous laws of physics involved. human brain is already synchronized to the movement of the earth. So, for that reason, we are given the power to the movement of the universe. But you have to stay at that level. We can't own it. We sure can learn how to regulate it. So, lowering the speed of the brain down in order to put focus comes naturally after a while. You can't rush it. It can be experienced by a blow on the head. It can be experienced by drugs. But the phenomenon is not any different. By either drugs or a blow on the head. A blow on the head will tell you to saw stars. And the chemistry will tell you to see all kind of galactic explosions or implosions. And by gradual progression of slowing down, it's the same phenomenon. Remember years ago, the man that made me a swami, a man swami, he experienced his state. He said that he was with Mahatma Gandhi at the time. And when he was a boy at 14, he met his guru who initiated him into meditation, slow the brain down on the inside. Yeah. Over the years, he never saw nothing. And even when one of the people that worked with Gandhi against the British and put him in jail and everything, so still practiced meditation with Gandhi, came out, made himself a fortune as a newspaper man, built up a tremendous newspaper empire and holding several newspaper companies. Still, he never saw anything in meditation. At the age of 65, he decided to retire. He gave all his family their share of the estate, and he retained a certain amount of money for his personal traveling. He didn't want anybody to sponsor his traveling. So he went to see his guru, and when he got up into the mountain, when he was 14 years of age, his guru was 45. Now he's 65. You can imagine how old the guru is. So he goes up to the mountain and makes a lesson to the teacher. And the guru says, "What do you want?" He says, "Guru, out of respect for you, I meditate, but I don't see anything in my head. All my friends have been initiated by you and by others. They all see wonderful things inside. And they have wonderful experiences. Me, that's a black. And they have caught my eye, that's black." A long moment before the start of that, he said, "Get away! Don't come back here." He was so torn up that the guru, that's all the guru said, "Get out of here, don't come back here." So he came up to the cave. There is his heart back in his eyes, he said. So he decided to sit down on the outside of the cave and look around the mountain. Still again, out of respect for the guru, he still closed his eyes and started to practice meditation. As soon as he closed his eyes, he says, "Pow!" My head exploded like the 4th of July firecracker. You ever say, "When it's the 4th of July, the firecracker, boom!" He says, "Well, to this day and that, his eyes open and his eyes shut. The 4th of July has been..." And When I met him and he met this Swami, he was in his 80s. He said, but imagine if I had got that before, I couldn't cope with it. I was able to do what I've done before. He said, now I realize why some people are like chicken eggs, some people are turtle eggs, others are like dinosaur eggs. Chicken eggs take 21 days to hatch. Turtle eggs take 90 days to hatch, and dinosaurs take 1,000 years to hatch. I'm just obvious. So we can't rush realization. We can't hope. Come too fast in there. What you gonna do? But you see, if that happened to him, he could walk around and work. Travel all the time. But the average individual wouldn't do that. What did you do? Eyes open, eyes shut, the door, 4th of July. Can you imagine the table at 4th of July when you open your eyes? Can you really put a plate on top of it? You couldn't pick up the glass because you wouldn't know how to differentiate. It's a glass or a mass of sparks going on there. There is no sense of coordinate normality. So that's why we call a man sane. That's where the word comes, sane. Because only the saneness of the saint, I say saint or holy, he's more holy than you, he's more saner than you, that he can take his consciousness and hold the focus between the massive movement of subatomic particles vibrating from optical dispersion to have meaningful condition in the world of fixation, which is all mind, like you say, relativity. So, the saint or the sane man and the schizophrenic or so-called insane man are the same. There is no insane person. They both seem the same identical thing. But the so-called insane person lives with the illusion that they can regulate this experience and end up hurting themselves. Because they are coming into the experience without any real preparation for it. I don't know if you saw the picture Altered States. And in that picture you saw there was no difference in that. And the only reason the man could maintain a normalcy from the electrical level to the physical fixation, what did he do? It happened to the last part of the movie when he was going to the experience. He did exactly what I did. I fell off in the building and broke out. He induced pain to regain normalcy. So he began to hit the wall with his hand. And as he hit the wall constantly, the body started to become normal again. Otherwise he was just drifting into it. The unified field of subatomic particles. They have no meaning. The same with me when I fell off the building years ago. This doesn't have meaningful existence. It's all subatomic particles. But in order for it to survive and live, I realize there's no sensation. And the sensation, if it gets past the head, the eyes, and you go into unconsciousness, you never come out of it. That's why people get unconscious and they remain in that state and then they pass on. Very few come out of it. It's because of the subatomic particle distortions and the fixations and the degree of toxicity. So I realized that the only thing that kept me conscious is the unconscious. I put my home, and I started biting with all of my might. Bite. Until I felt the forcing pressure of pain. Then the brain shut down to the level of impact of the pain threshold, which was exactly the pain threshold that the doctor established when it hit the body to make it crack. So that pain threshold is a necessary warning device. So when it hit that brain shook back, then the numbness start to recede away from the eyes, down to the heart, and then left in front of the atmosphere, bubbling water. You can feel you're in two different dimensions. A dimension of fixed geometry and a dimension of unfixed geometry. And then I began to realize all the physics. If you get a shortcut to education, the universe, death is your best teacher, but I don't advise you. Karma, all of your karma. God don't give you all your karma anyhow. Your body couldn't take it. He gives you some. And so in the sum total of all your karma, there may be many multiple death experiences. So you can go ask for all of it. But it's a shortcut way, yes. It's not a practical. I did it out of curiosity and not of stupidity. But curiosity may kill it carefully, but it still took curiosity to bring it back. The curiosity forced me to find out about myself. It became what you call a real Pandora's box. Inner consciousness like that. But the training that I had prior to the experience was an asset instead of a deficit. But again, if you don't have other spiritual beings but being in contact, it's not a practical thing. I was fortunate, Yogananda was a spiritual guide, and other beings in my early childhood days, they became my spare tire. Now, a spare tire is a very important thing when you go down the road. You don't want to go down the road without your spare tire. It's not practical. So, same thing if you have a biological breakdown. You want contact with some living group or some person who has contact with the energy field in there to cushion. You'll have to pay the consequences of being hurt, but at least you don't have to be destroyed totally. But you learn your lessons and you do get your enlightenment. Delta wave is there in the brain. There are two levels of it. One is the non-moving state that everybody will experience. And then the other one is the moving state. You get up, pick up the bed and walk. And pick up the body and walk. That is the last state. So you're saying that's the last state, like Lazarus. Lazarus comes out. You have to take Lazarus out of the delta state, shut down, and make him walk again. But in Lazarus' case, Lazarus didn't die by his own volition. Most people don't know the story of Lazarus, how he was in that state. Are you familiar with the story of Lazarus in the Bible? What?
I said I know the story, but I'd love to hear your interpretation of it.
There was a rich man See, there were two Lazarus, a poor Lazarus, who was full of sores. And there was a rich Lazarus, who owned a lot of wealth. He was the Lazarus that came to Jesus and said, what does a poor rich man have to do to enter the kingdom of heaven? And so Jesus said, go sell everything and follow me. That was very, very hard for a rich person to do. To automatically practice this, the behavior of detachment, to attachment. What is riches? Possessions of security, which puts you in a frame of acceptance over those who don't have or those who have, who respect you. So he realized that this man could not make that decision right away. So it's difficult for the rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's like a candle to go through the needle's eye. There is a place in the wall that the Romans built, which they call the eye of the needle. And a camel, if it was carrying contraband in those days, that's how the terrorists smuggled weapons in the outside of the wall to fight the Romans. It stuck mouth of the camel by fasting it for several days and fill it up with weapons and then bring it through and then kill the camel and get the weapons to start fighting. So the Romans have been surprised too many times by that. Wouldn't permit that to happen no more, so they built this special opening in the wall, and anything that was coming through now had to walk through that. So if there's any contraband hidden in the tummy of the camel, it will stick out. A starved camel, starved for so many days, would be that size only, and it would pass through. And that's how the Romans check anyone disguised and not trying to bring through that hidden in the form of contraband. And same way, the rich man is so locked into possessions. There's no room in his mind to disengage from his possessions in order to identify with creative consciousness. Jesus, knowing that, had compassion for that man. But as a rule, even today, who would sponsor walking gurus to have them at their homes? Have satsang, unless the person at the home didn't buy. So you see, in a house like this, it would be a typical get-together in those days where Jesus would gather at night with the people who travel with him. At the home of the wealthy, he would be attracting a lot of people. That was common practice all through the East. The Rajas and the wealthy merchants provided opportunity for the traffic teachers to give satsang or get-togethers. And that is what is happening at the house of Lazarus. He was invited by Lazarus to stay there. And but Lazarus would become a disciple of his in a different context. Jesus had many types of disciples. He had the regular 12 that he selected, and then he had the householder type that would not follow the path of renunciation or detachment. And so those were usually the ones that he would visit. Also those who he healed, they would become disciples. So he stayed at this Lazarus house, and this Lazarus had two sisters. But Jesus realized the longer he stayed, the more difficult it would be for men to disengage, to go into the inner consciousness. So the only way he could help this man was to go away from the man was. And he decided to go away with his disciples. So when he started to go away, the energy started to pull. And suddenly, Lazarus starts feeling sick. He didn't say what kind of sickness. But those who have been through this process know that it's the long for the Guru to appear within the inner eye, to resolve the anguish between the beta level of the brain and the delta levels of the brain, to release the pressures of the attachment to the physical world that is generated by the beta level of the brain, and the yearning for the treasures of the spirit in the delta level is a tremendous anguish for anyone who wants to go in with serious reality, this cosmic beingness. He knew that was going to have to happen. So the further he went, the more Lazarus got weaker and weaker. By that time, the sisters, who realized this man was so great, he was a teacher, he could do something for their brother. So they sent a message to tell him that their brother was sick. And he paid no attention, knowing fully well that their concern had nothing to do with the teacher-disciple relationship. Once the teacher takes responsibility for the unfoldment of the consciousness, he will go the whole length of the journey of the inner play. And those who are involved have to go through it. So he paid no attention, and he kept going further away. And finally, the message went to see. If you've been here and our brother's sick, you need to go back. Again, got a message, brother died. Then he turns around and goes back to the house. And when they arrive at the house, the sisters were going to tell him how their brother. But picture for one moment the way they stated and how they're feeling. If you're the sister of a man who had been generous enough to have a person at the house who have all these qualities not respond to the request of coming to help them, person and they're sick, you would like to give that person a piece of your mind. But again, they held back that feeling, and this is how they said to the teacher, Master, if you were here, our brother would not be faring thus. It's already a phony statement that says, you son of a bitch, why did you come and repeat it? That's really what deep down, because you died at our house and we treated you good, and our brother was so generous to you, he did everything for you and your friends and all the disciples, and you took off and he got sick, and when he sent me a message, he didn't come, he didn't even give us a time of a day, even to say, go tell these people it's going to be alright, and no such message. See what I mean? It's just human nature, you just can't see it, but people don't see these factors in it, but they just read it, oh yes, it's not life. He wouldn't be fearing thus and leave it like that. Deep down, you have put yourself in the actual experience of those things. Your body starts to tell you, that don't make sense. Who the hell can talk like this on a condition like that? You burn him up in anger. You burn up in resentment. You burn up in being abused in any way. But you hold it back. And you respect his love overrides. And all these things seem to get the preference of your feelings. But his remark is comical too. Where is the body? Master, he's been dead for the last 3 days.
Yep, where's he buried? You make no bones, where? So, they took him to the cemetery. And then he stands outside and says, Lazarus, come forth. Big show. And then he turns to his side and says, Father, I didn't have to say that the Lord brought it up because of the people around. What a charade. Then you know for sure that this guru does switch off the disciples' connectedness to his attachment once and for all in the material part of the beta wave of the brain and pull him through to delta and force them to bury him. So he really experienced detachment once and for all. Now he's ready to live in delta wave. You understand? Because there's no attachment there when they bury you. You're totally detached from your beta function of your brain. You're going to be in delta. So, and the teacher is commenting, Father, I didn't have to say it in a loud voice, only because of the people around. Knowing, so the ordinary person reading that wouldn't understand why the hell is it. But the anyway, going through those processes, you know, there was no other way to do it to such a person who was rich. You don't have any alternative than to shut down the mechanism and pull them through the outward charade of burial and all these things. So the body was shut down, yes. It wasn't decomposing. But the sister said that he stinketh. This is their assumption was that. But he wasn't concerned with that. Because there are many ways to shut the body down without rotting. And the delta level can be demonstrated, and the doctors who were attending wouldn't know if the body was dead or not. Because the common assessment of a dead body is no beating heart. They didn't have mirrors to put on the nose to see if it's breathing or any parting up in the glass. All they know, the heart is beating, he can't bury him before he stink up the place. And that's how they would assess in those days. Their version of assessing death was very, very limited in many ways. Mm. And we have one case like that in Lazarus, where they buried him, the king was dead, and the teacher had really shut down the energy. Then he came back and said, Lazarus, come forth. It was an outward demonstration, but he was just turning the delta back up again in the disciple. And the disciple couldn't picture for one moment the disciple saying, when Lazarus, come forth, and the disciple lying down in the delta level said, no, boss, I ain't getting up here. I'm enjoying this. I'm really detached, man. I ain't coming out of this dog. No one. But you have to come out when you have a problem with looking like that, too. You can't raise too many deads. Because Julius Caesar will come around to collect income tax. So not wise to raise a dead man from the grave, because of course some people like the stacks. So there aren't a mass dead raising, there's mass feeding people food. You can feed people a lot, no problem. But to raise the dead in large quantities, a practical thing. That's not a phenomenon to think of. So raising the dead is not what we think it is. Anyway, Lazarus came out. He's back with this little dog. But even when Jesus went to another house in his early mission, somebody said that Jairus was a man who said his daughter had died, and if Jesus would come, he believed in Jesus, but if Jesus could give life back to his daughter. And he pleaded with Jesus for help. Jesus openly said, she's asleep.
They say, the doctor said, the girl is dead. Who the hell do you think you are? The cop says, she's sleeping. What the hell do you know? We are doctors. Who is this joker? Where are you picking up? Where is this weirdo coming from? Like, come and tell us, she's sleeping. Well, big buddy, if you're so smart, do something. That you can picture the imagination and the mind of the people at the time. And somebody walks in, especially, he was just about 21 then. Well, you're already 32. Saying openly to the people, oh, she's asleep. And you got all these elderly doctors who say, she's dead, forget about it, very pure. Here walks in, this guy said, she's only asleep. What does he know? Is he a doctor? What is he? But Jairus paid no attention to them, brought the opportunity. Jesus held her. As far as medical knowledge in those days, it is always when the heart stops, the assumption is that you're dead. When consciousness has come upon you, you're not moving, the body shut down. Man doesn't know that the body takes a long time to break down. And minimum time for the body to make any transition from shutdown to breakdown is 72 hours. That's the same length of time it takes a caterpillar to become a butterfly. We can't change the laws of nature. We can only live through it. So today doctors don't like to write off your patient has been dead. They like to pursue the observation. And they don't like to grant certificates to the dead before 74 years old. And you can't make any artificial method performed to pressurize the breathing. Then they have to write off. But they still would like, before they turn it over to the family or the morgue, a 72-hour period. They're realizing a lot about the law of physics. And that's the length of time. You and the Lazarus died, they buried him between the 72-hour period. All the researchers today, the people who die and came back after they died, was it within a 24-hour period, not a 72-hour period. So that is evidence that something electrically is going on in the body, that the shutdown of the unconsciousness, the brain, and the organs of the heart is not necessarily dead. So the heart stopping, there's no evidence that you're truly dead. So when the brain stops, then you shut down. So acupuncturists knew this centuries ago, that when the heart stopped, the brain didn't stop. There was always a connection going on for 72 hours. It's between that period, the experience of what we call out-of-body experiences occur. The theta level of the brain comprises experiences to be out of the body. And so we live with this illusion that we go out of our body. In actuality, we never went anywhere, and we don't go anywhere. We've always been there. But we didn't know that the brain accelerations, that different speeds produce the phenomenon of seeing yourself outside of yourself. Kind of preposterous. See, you went someplace and you came back. Because you are an atomic principle. And the atom occupies every unit of space. So where is it going to go? But the phenomenon of the atom is conditioned to slow down at different speeds to produce the phenomenon of personality and identity and individuality. But when the pressure is released by a shift of focus, you think you are there, and you're not here. And so the illusion is you think you went up to your body, and that your body is there and you're over here. Now, when I fell off the building, I had the same experience. I know I am conscious. I see my body lying on the ground. That part which is conscious to look at the body lined up is looking for the body to be a container for the consciousness.
The thing is, for the first time, hey, I'm gas, I'm atoms. I'm the only gas in the whole world that can have this experience. It's called oxygen. Oxygen is a gas that pervades space that produces the phenomenon called consciousness. And that body, for all that matter, was never conscious at all. It was just like a box of bladders that you take and blow up and make them into balloons and boost them up in the air. Some people are blown up with hot air, others are blown up with helium. So I said, oh boy, I really never went any place, and I ain't going any place, because the I am is. And I look around and I see Yogananda and all of them in the same state. They don't have no form, but their geometry is starting to manifest to give them integrity of I amness. And they're smiling, I guess, to say, well, join the crowd. What is the crowd? Sense of eternalness. God is all there is. Then you know why the poet wrote, or the philosopher wrote, life is but an empty dream. One big dream, the I amness, dreaming it out. So out of body experience didn't have any value, because I never went anywhere and I ain't going nowhere. So the illusion of working like mad to go out of the body to come back into it, that's a bunch of nonsense. It's a nice game we invent. When in actuality, what we're trying to experience is holistic vision, which they call darshan, the holy sight, the total sight, seeing God as, or as pure in heart sees God. The internal focusing of the heart provides, you know, the capacity to see true things instead of seeing at. We're looking at this, but it's transparent because it's glass. You can see through it. Look at this here, and it's not transparent. Therefore, you can't see through it. So there are only two states of vision in the body, at and through. At is limited by your fixations, what you think about yourself. True is unlimited. So the realized man is called a seer, S-W-E-R, one who sees through. But you can't do a doggone thing, even though you can see through. So don't go rush up to a wise man and say, hey buddy, you can see now, tell me. Hey, look at you. All you can reinforce is your love to look at yourself so that you don't be afraid of yourself, and then you see through. Then there's nothing to freak out about. But the whole thing is gone. And that's why you end up saying, oh, I now understand Jesus, love the Lord thy God with all your mind, heart, and soul, and neighbor as yourself. Because we're all caught up in this illusion of at and truth. At is my individual self here, Dharma. Seeing through is a sense of unification with everything. And you have to slow the brain down to get the experience. When everything starts to synchronize. So that experience is the way nature provided the common unity. And that's the reason why Paul used that statement, I live and die daily in the Lord. So you have to experience being in the body, the at state of the vision, and then seeing truth to experience what we call the death state of the body. Both states were. And then he realized the truth himself. Then he went to work again, can't make.
even it's 2 feet. So all the biblical writings talk of death and how people relate to death. When Jesus was on the cross, they said he gave up the ghost. They nailed him in the morning, and before sunset, he'd already died. Well, the Romans know that's a bunch of baloney. You can't die that fast, no matter how you crucify him. And in the olden days, they never nailed you to a cross. They'd tie you to the cross, break your bones for several days, and let the blood run out of you and straight before you really die of the anguish. So that when they said they nailed him to the cross, and they were told at the end of the afternoon that he had died, I couldn't believe that. Because it's not possible, number one, physically by physics, to nail it through the palm of the hand, the weight will break the bone. And evidence has stated that no bone will break broken. But between here is a hollow space that you can put a nail right through, and it will hang with a close hanger, the weight. So he was nailed in the wrist, and he wasn't nailed straight up like this. Not possible to nail a human body like that. There was a little kind of wooden cleat to support the buttock and the foot. And the nails were driven through this, openings on the side here. Like you can't drill here or break the bones. But when through here is not open, just like the rest. So the pin is like that. And he was hung like that. That's the actual evidence found on the shroud when it was taken down, cut out, and the blood stains from the wound. But because the Romans never believed that he was dead, they had to send somebody to check it out. It's customary that they wanted the body done before the sunset burial. That's why they asked for it. And the man that asked for it was a highly respected man. His name was Joseph Arimathea, and he traded with the Romans. So they respected him. But before they turned the body over, they checked with one of their men. It's a foot soldier. Customary, the Romans never trusted anybody in the battlefield. When they died, if the army marches, they would have behind them a group of men they call the sappers, S-A-P-P-E-R-S. These fellows came along behind the army with long spears and probed each dead person, plunged it into them, just to make sure they weren't faking death. So that is how many Romans lost their life years ago, because these people would lie down and play death. And then when the soldier walked past, the back would fall into his back in the back of the cave. So to prevent that, the Romans had these sappers walk behind them, probing each dead body. If you were not dead, you sure would be dead now, because that spear go right through up in the heart area. So when this sapper came along to find out if he was faking, he took the spear and pushed it into the body. Not possible that a dead body, if it was dead, that you perforated, that water will run out. You can perforate a dead body and blood will come to the surface, but not water. Only a living body will give out water. But the sapper doesn't know the difference between dead and living. What he is trained in is, when he pushes the spear into you, if you don't grunt, you're dead. And if you grunt, too late, buddy, the spirit of God into you, and you're now dead for sure. That's how they were trained, you see. So it's in their simple way, they had ways to validate. But to ask a sapper in those days that the blood and water came out, he would know the difference. The medical doctor didn't know it. But it's recorded by those who observed that blood and water came from. All the man is, no grunt, he's dead, take him down. He writes off, he's okay. That's his job. He has to have a way to validate being dead or not dead. and that is a groom or a yellow. If you're faking it, and you get punched in the side, you can groom. He was in a deep state of delta. That's why he said he gave up the ghost. What is the ghost? He gave up the association with the beta level of the brain and locked in, down into the delta level of the brain, where alpha and theta levels don't read sound or produce any resonance by perforation. So the body was in a state of suspended animation, and therefore you could cut it up. It wouldn't express pain, but it would be evidence it was living, because blood and water would be coming through the wound. But medical men weren't trained in those days to recognize that, and let alone the people. So when the evidence was there in the recorded information, what state the man is in. Now with research, we are validating all of that. Then, so many records of death and in different levels, the final culmination of man's whole purpose is a deathless body and a non-decomposing body. What is the purpose of all this? It's to show us where we're really heading in our accomplishment. When this body has thrown off corruption, meaning this body has thrown off decomposition, and taken on non-corruption or non-decomposition, it's a glory unto God, meaning the body is totally free from toxicity and could withstand any attempt to break it up. It will not break down. That is valid facts for the body. We don't make it, it's already inside. A caterpillar carries a butterfly hood inside of him. All it does is eat its way the butterfly hood. And then it shuts down and becomes a cocoon in 7 to 2 hours. Those tissue are transmuted. It emerges a beautiful creature. And all the creatures that can fly, there's no more beautiful than one fly. It takes off, it goes. You'll never find a lot more butterfly. You'll always find a lot more caterpillars. I spent many years squashing them, caterpillars to prove that they're rot. And squashing butterflies will never rot. So I know they're two characters. Same with the tissue here. Non-decomposition is the process. Yogananda's body knows that. All the other saints of all beliefs all have the same one common factor. But it's locked up in attitude and toxicity. You can make yourself toxic by what you say and what you think. You can make yourself toxic by what you eat. So God has no intention to go out of business before midnight eternity. Therefore, he's not coming down to tell you the shortcut to realization. He's letting you learn it the hard way with personal confrontations and personal intoxication of yourselves. Therefore, they leave a statement in the biblical writings for men to follow. Cleanliness is next to what?
Cleanliness.
That's a guideline to your journey through the universe. What kind of cleanliness? And what kind of godliness are you talking about? God is permanent. Cleanliness means non-toxic. What is it that's going to be maintaining a non-toxic state in order to be permanent? Only the body. And so the evidence shows up at depth in various individuals who pursue various belief systems. So every religion has produced like a sane or a saint person whose body doesn't show any sign of decomposition at depth. The proclamation is when this body throws out corruption, it's a glory unto God. to him that overcome it, I will not send forth a second time, but I'll make him a pillar in the house of the Lord.
To overcome what?
He'd have to overcome decomposition. And to make him a pillar is a fixture, something permanent, that holds up the structure. So it's a part of the universe that confronts us when we see it. The house of God is the cosmos. The arm for the four elements in their permanent state for the first time. Your journey then is an individual journey. It's not a group journey. Everyone finds his own realization, his own life. But he could be encouraged, and the group activities are encouraging, but still it's personal. And it's the love that reinforces it. So throughout all your writings, we come back to three important things. The body is the temple of God. The non-decomposition as evidence of God's being. The unconditional love to move through. It's a very unique process, but with an reward. So each incarnation is a challenge. It doesn't belong to one group. It's a universal law. It applies to everyone.
Through breakfast.
As far as chemistry is concerned, it's valid. Mm-hmm. It's valid to eat it in the middle of the day. Now, if it's lunar time, full moon time, you can eat it in the morning.
Oh.
Solar nutrition is the most flexible science there is. If you know that. There's a time to go to heaven as well as a time to go to heaven comes back. You hear what I say?
Mm. Time to go to hell.
I said there's a time to go to heaven and there's a time to go to hell and come out back.
And come right back?
And come out of hell right back. Mm. In other words, you are your own heaven and hell. According to Omar Khayyam. If you know when, you can move in these levels of consciousness without being hurt by them. But if you don't know when, you will be hurt by your fixation.
Hey, speak a little bit about depression and how that's related to diet. I notice with myself that sometimes all of a sudden I'll just get depressed. I have no idea why. Now I'm beginning to think that it's because I'm not eating right. Probably I'm depressing myself because I'm eating things at the wrong time.
Yes, the depression is strictly a result of increased carbon dioxide, which is gas, not from the blood sugar. Yes, you go too fast or too slow.
Mm-hmm.
You refrigerate yourself. You're depressing. You understand what the word means?
Mm-hmm.
You're squeezing down or putting yourself in a hypo state, which is fermentation due to food not moving out on time and eating at the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't see it as that. We only refer to it as blood sugar, moving too fast or too slow by the pancreas. So we could label the symptom depression, when in actuality it's the result of wrong timing in the input of the food according to its growth pattern. The body's not handling it.
What about depression if it's first thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up and you haven't eaten?
It is based on what you ate last night.
Even that long period of time, it's still perfect.
Most of us live with this illusion that the body digests food just because we put it in. It doesn't do that. If the food doesn't go in on time, in reference to how the body is constructed, it's not going to do it.
The question is very simple. Would you work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Now listen to what you're saying from your own personality level as an individual. If you would not do it, physically looking at your body, relating to your environment, and calling yourself a human being, and you would not do it, you would set up every rejection to do such a thing, and every conviction to do such a thing. Do you expect the subatomic particles, the things that inside your tissues that run your body, runs this surface skin that you think is body, those particles of matter, those organs inside, those enzymes, those chemicals, you think they're going to work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Woo-hoo. But we live with the illusion that we are living, it's running, it's doing its job. Baloney, it ain't doing that. Doctors are waking up that this is the most erroneous illusion of the human being. The Indian man in India and China have been telling us, yeah, that's what they call Maya. Illusion. Outside is not inside. What is happening outside isn't happening at a subatomic level. Inside is a very organized system. Inside they work on time schedules of 3 8-hour shift. You're not going to work no 24 hours. You may work 2 12-hour shift or 1 12-hour shift. Or you may work an 8-hour shift. Or you may work 2 8-hour shifts and rest one unless you want to make extra money. But your body never, internally, is not going to do what you expect it to do. So when you put in food, believing it's going to break it down and absorb it, the erroneous notion shows up not before you're 30 years of age. So it takes 30 years to knock up. And then 30 years to clean up, and all the rest you have it free, by grace of God. So the first 30 years, your ego, all your inward drives are so predominant. You live with all illusions, only to find out the next 30 years you're busy cleaning it up. So they call the first 30 years, when it occurs, Saturn return. Saturn return means you're going to have to discipline your life now. Like it or not, if you never did before, you're sure going to have to learn now. Till the next 30 years.
And if you don't do it then, and then your next Saturn return comes up, you're cooked.
Right, okay. So your astrology, or the scope of the horror, is a fixed process of disciplining the body back into divinity. God had to set up his own laws. Is he going to let the thing run by random?
The scope of the horror.
That's it, the horoscope. But you were forced to recognize it sooner or later by your mistakes, and you just have to seek out guidance to overcome it. Medical astrology is so full with facts about it, it's a doctor's looking at it as the closest system for proper diagnosis before they go touch you now. They work with the chemistry, yes, but when they look at the medical diagnosis, they're working with consultants for the problem in their research to pinpoint more accurately why the body breaks down at certain times. They're getting into the time now because it's becoming obvious.
Does it take the full 30 years to clean it up?
Let me clarify for you so you don't get the illusion. Health is not something you can buy in a store. It's not a goal to strive for. Health is the process of living moment to moment. So, for 30 years you'll find you're going to violate every rule of health. Because you're going to take it for granted that you're a young person, and you can get your wishes and whims because there's no ache and pain in the body. And your parents are spending a lot of time to keep you insulated against it by feeding you on time till you decide to rebel against it at age 18 and go do your own thing. But from age 1 to age 18, they sure condition you to eat 3 meals a day like it or not, it may not be the ideal type of food for each time cycle, but they don't condition you that you gotta eat, and then you feel threatened because you're doing it by repetition. You resent that, and so when you're on your own and you leave home, you skip breakfast and do all crazy things, gunk up till you're 30. The body will take that overload up to 30 years. That's why the spectrum of time is set up for a Saturn return. And so when Saturn comes in, that's the first thing that hits you right in the tummy. That's what you call a blow in the gut. You start getting aches and pains, headaches, because Saturn is that function that directs its magnetic field totally on the core. Then it stays within a certain length of time of your life to force you to start cleaning up. Then you go through the next 30 years cleaning up, because it'll come back at the end of the next 30 years. It sets you up to clean up. Then it turns you over to the other four fields of lining up your body back in unity with the creative intelligence. And then it comes back the next 30 years to check out if you have cleaned up. Now, if you have cleaned up, good gear, keep on going. It's, I ain't gonna bother you for the next 30 years. So that's the basic laws. But if you didn't clean up, it'll hit you again. And that's basically the God's way to test his creation. Because who would make something like this and never test it to see if it'll hold up? The only way you can test it is to hit it. Now, keep hitting, you'll develop a certain amount of pressure. It didn't break now. Pop. It didn't break now. Pop. It didn't break now. Keep it. Until you get the right pressure, when it's not, ah. It takes 14 pounds pressure to break it. 10, 12, 11, don't break it. Fast 14, that's it. So nobody will knock you around, put it down, mark it down. This will break at 14 pounds pressure in time. It's established. That's the same with the body. But the Creator is not going to come and tell you that, that your body is going to break down a certain. This is something you have to learn by trial and error. Because he's not going to go out of business. He has no intention of going to business. He's going to be in business for a long, long time. But he wants us to realize his divinity is in us. And through our own effort of love to bring it to the surface. He's not going to force it to the surface. But he put up enough hurdles in your way to make you realize that you have to bring it to the surface. That's why it's called horoscope. Time, place, season for everything. Not for something. It's everything. That's what's so fantastic about this universe. It's not an imaginative world. It's a world of beingness based upon constructive action, based upon love. And it's very, very difficult to do it when we don't understand it. We get broken up too quick. We get worried. And when we start understanding, then we see that we can cope with it. So health is not something you can buy. I can't sell health. I can only direct you to stay healthy. And what you do to stay healthy is the process, not the goal. But in that process, you'll find two things emerging. One, you will not be afraid to live your life. So that's a sense of strength and courage. Two, you will not panic if you don't rush it. That will give you faith in yourself. And it's your faith that makes you whole. It's your conviction about yourself. The stars may foretell, but they don't compel. They may tell you where the roads, the exits on the road, and how long the journey is. But they can't compel you to get off at any exit. Where you are going is all between you and yourself. And how long it takes for you to get there is all between you and yourself. And where you want to quit or carry on or rest is on the yourself. Nobody can force that. So help is only a condition of the moment of living. You can't buy it, you can't give it to nobody. Or you can correct or prevent the conditions that produce ill health. And it's geared to timing.
What an exercise.
We need some every day. That's why the Eastern men develop two ways to God. Sit down all day or get up and move all day. Pick your choice. Yogis sit down and don't do nothing. That's one way of exercising. And the Oriental Chinaman gets up and do Tai Chi and moves all day. Here in America, we pump iron. And between that, you can swim. So any kind of movement plus little relaxation is beneficial to the body. We can't stay stationary all the time, and we can't be moving all the time. We have to strike a balance between them.
What do you think of aerobics? Some
of
these more radical exercise programs.
Each one has its good point and its bad point.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found, I've tried them all. And if you don't know when to do it, you get sick.
If you don't what?
Know when to do it, you'll get sick.
Oh.
There's a time for break dancing, and there's a time for sitting down to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
There's a time to do gymnastics. All are set the time.
What's the right time for hatha yoga?
In the morning, when you wake up, and before you go to bed. But there's a third time, and that's in the afternoon before sunset. Any other time, the body starts to break up. Because you'll be dumping too much toxins into the system, and you end up wondering what happened to you. You're doing the hatha yoga, and you're getting more sick. It's not the hatha yoga, it's that you never realize what the body is doing. So timing is a more important knowledge than just what. A good example is, when do animals move around?
Mm-hmm. Morning and night.
Morning and night, right? We go by the ocean, the fish are doing what? They're all moving under the water. And before dawn, they're all moving in the water. In the middle of the day, how many animals are moving around? And then they're stupid. They'll move around through the afternoon. And they are tissue. And you're tissue. The only difference between you and them is the creative consciousness in them, body, the mind, through the voice. As far as tissues are set up, and the system is set up, it does all gear to the clock.
Is it good to do any exercise then in the morning and in the afternoon?
Yes. Then you, between 3 and 5 in the morning, if you were in China, you got up and went out to the hotel, you'll see that all the streets are filled with two-legged creatures jumping up and down. They're doing their Tai Chi. Chi means energy, and Tai means control. So what are they doing? That you call exercise. You spend 2 hours doing it at that time of the day. Which then Yogananda came to this country and call it energization techniques.
learning to energize the tissues.
But between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the morning, it's one of the most ideal times to do.
What about doing hot yoga at 7 o'clock? Is that not good?
It's good in the morning, but you're getting best results between 3 and 5.
I thought I was pretty hot yoga at 7.
It's all right at 7, don't get me wrong. You're doing it within a time frame of a certain function. But when you know these functions, how they're set up, then it's a vast difference. Why some people get results, and others, they long to get results.
It's also a good time to meditate.
Yes, that is also known as God time. And that's what Jesus meant. He said, "Render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and render unto God what is God." And then you begin to ask, what we know what belongs to Caesar, that's income tax. What belongs to God? That you gotta give back God something, what belongs to God?
Breath.
Yes. Your first breath is called love.
Breath.
Outgoing breath or incoming breath?
Incoming.
So, what do you pay tax on?
Incoming breath.
Oh. Uncle Sam, don't collect tax on outcome. You collect tax on income. It's very simple, but it's factual, and that's the truth about it. We never look at it that way because we're looking for something nebulous. The incoming breath, you don't have a single thing to do with it. Because you didn't breathe it in, it is pushed into you. So it belongs to who? God. But you don't exist without the incoming breath. So who are you? Are you the body? Or are you the breath? Good. Then nothing belongs to you. It belongs to God, right? But if you are the breath, and God is the giver of the breath. Two things equal to the same thing are themselves equal to one. Then you see me, you see who? Now you understand, Brother Jesus? He was well grounded in his physics, not philosophy. That's facts. Two things equal to the same things are themselves equal to one. You learn that when you go to school, right? So if you are the breath, and the breath is God, these two things are equal to themselves, then who are you? Made manifest. So you have every right to say, you see me, you see the Father. And the other fellow has every right to say the same thing back to you. Then you know why we have to love with all our mind, all our heart, all our strength, all our soul, and labor as ourselves. Because who are we in the first place? The creator playing the game of individuality in human shapes, man, woman. In, out, in, out. But there's a pause between the in and the out. And there's a pause between. So, that pause is what sets up awareness. No pause, no awareness. You can't just begin to look at that. Stops, and then go back, stops.
So the greater the distance of pause, the greater the awareness?
That's right.
That's why your breathing slows down during meditation.
Correct.
So the added atoms of oxygen speeds up the glial cells of the brain to release the genius. So man appears to be a genius. The certain cells of the brain are reinforced by the oxygen, producing what we call creativity, which is not program impressions, which we call memory bank.
Doesn't that also
refrigerate without liquid? Well, oxygen doesn't refrigerate, carbon dioxide refrigerates. Because carbon dioxide, you're a carbon-based organism. And if oxygen goes in and comes in contact with carbon, what's it going to form? It's going to get hot, and then it's going to form a gas called carbon dioxide. And then the carbon dioxide is going to set up a cooling effect, and therefore what happens here by it refrigerates. If it doesn't come out on time, if it stays in there longer than it's due to stay in, the result is freezing, breaking up or bloating up. So what do we put in a Coca-Cola to make it
Carbon dioxide.
Yeah, you turn around and drink it. What do you want? If you get bloated up, don't blame nobody.
And is this the reason then why the body kind of goes into a quieting down and temperature changes? Because you're not releasing the carbon dioxide in the same speed as you do normally when you're meditating? That's why the body cools down and you can go into new numbness, awareness.
Oh. You're inducing what is called cellular refrigeration via respiration. And the result is visual disassociation, known as convex vision, or clairvoyant vision, or seeing into the subatomic particles. So Jesus said, when the eyes are single, you can't make them single when they open. You only can make them single when they close. The whole body is full of light. If you're in doubt as to the light in there, it's very simple. Close your eyes, and then you'll see everything starts to be dark. And after a while, you'll see light inside, lighting up. In meditation, it's like a movie screen, which is the subatomic particles that are functioning in the tissues. The phosphorus is released, you need to see in the dark, phosphorescence. But we never spoke like that before. We made a lot of nice philosophy and poetry out of these different experiences. And the individual got lost in his imagination instead of the actuality of functioning with the reality of his nature. When we clear out all of that and look at it in its actual truth, there is more to be gathered from it. What is to be gathered out of that is cellular transmutation. The transforming of this mechanism to a state of control over the mass. So this is atomic mass. It has many capabilities. One of these capabilities is to speed up and be visible or invisible. That's what they call materializing or dematerializing at will. Speed up to the point where it casts no shadow, leave no footprint. Eat every day, go to sleep every day, but cannot be photographed. There are 20 qualities in this mechanism, each border on the fantastic. Superman or the Christ man. So
but we don't know this until we go through all the processes to find it. But it's been lifting down for thousands of years. The qualities and the, all the ideas of Superman is nothing new to the Vedic writers. The Vedic writers even have more than what Superman does. When we begin to read the Vedic writings that what his body can do, Superman looked like a little baby boy. But these men wrote their knowledge thousands of years ago and left it to the world. They felt the qualities of the body. One of the qualities is becoming son of God and immortality of the body. That's another quality. Those two we are conscious of, and the capability of performing certain extrasensory functions, manifesting certain functions. Jesus did that. But all of what he did was never recorded because it was too fantastic to believe it, number one. And especially in an environment like the Jewish people and among the Romans, it would blow away their mind entirely. So you can see why they got rid of him very fast. But they allow us to say, if he was so good, why he allowed them to destroy him? They realize man doesn't come to interfere with nature, it comes to live nature. Only to make those who think they understand it regret the mistakes they make. For that reason, he couldn't stop them from nailing him to a cross and go through the trial.
And brother against brother, and father against son, something of that nature. I don't want to misquote it.
A realized man does not come to establish a society of group association. He comes to establish a sense of individuality with God and your right to be free in God. Therefore, there are no something for nothing universe for a realized man. His whole mission is something for something. So, brother against brother is don't hang on another guy's short tail and expect you to get to heaven.
Don't you think it might also mean that the person becoming realized begins to change in a way that other people reject him because it challenges them to begin to realize themselves?
That's why there's no... We're saying the society is a relationship with people to accept each other and to function in harmony. Individuality is not a relationship. Individuality is a self-discovery to freedom. But through the process of self-discovery, everything has to be shed. So it's like a bat. It has the face of a rat. It flies like a bird, but has no feathers and hangs upside down. That's what makes it a unique being in creation. It defies everything, and yet at the same time, it threatens every form of life in their individuality. So, individuality is the principle. Seek the truth which is within you, and its righteousness. Free men all, Lord of itself. It's not a society. Creative intelligence doesn't have a society to offer his creation. He's not here to provide a society for his creation. He's here to provide an opportunity to be dynamically a representation of Godness throughout the entire universe, but not to own it, but to enjoy it and give it and maintain it. So there is no way society will ever come to a state where it will be a permanent idea in man. The only thing that is permanent in man is his divinity. Everything else is plays of consciousness. So he can go... That's why divinity has no race, no sex. Whoever it is, at whatever moment they decide to accept their divinity,
that moment is, what is it going to be? A baby can walk in this room, 5 years of age, black, yellow, brown, boy or girl, and says, hey, shut up, I am the son of God. Oh, come on, get the hell out of here. And melt your watch off your head. Then you say, oh my gosh, what we got here? That's the kind of reality of individuality. It has nothing to do with society. You see what I mean? So you can imagine a boy like Jesus coming along and blowing away all the belief systems of these guys who were talking and lecturing in the synagogue. They couldn't take a thing like that. But as far as God is concerned, he's not a concern with society. Because that's the thing we create of ourselves. The need to get it together. He's more concerned with the individuality, because what did he make? He made an individual. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. And the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh and dwells in man. Individuality is that principle. It's not in the beginning was a big society, and it's going to be a big society. No. Each one of us is put on our own merit to demonstrate divinity. So the other person can't do it for us. If I eat, you're never going to be satisfied. No matter how you try looking at me. You have to eat for yourself. You have to release the divinity from inside of yourself. So don't get threatened or feel left out. There's no such thing. You have all eternity to bring to the surface. And it doesn't require intellect to do it. It requires love to feel this sense of oneness with God. And that's all there is that is required. That's why a child can do it. The only difference between a child and an adult is already programmed into comparison and logic. A child isn't programmed into that. That's why he says, unless you become like one of these, you can't enter. The logic and the comparison interferes with the selflessness of the love, with the naturalness of the love. But you need both. You need the comparison of the logic, and you need the naturalness of the child, or the innocence of the child, to put it together. So then you begin to see now that you're not afraid to take time off and go in and meditate. Then after a while, it's living meditation, not practicing meditation. You are actually walking and living in that state of now.
You've spoken the last 2 nights about different laws of evolving and progression. Then you have the influences of the horoscope in terms of sort of guiding you, directing you. Is there a way to speed up the livingness of meditation? Not necessarily to ask for all your karma, but is there a way to speed it up or to compress it? Using the same laws that are evident in evolution, even though everything comes in its own time, what is it that could actually speed up the timing? They could take 10 lifetimes and speed it up, but still be safe. Is there anything within physics that can relate that to our lives?
From your question, it reminds me of the egg that wants to come before a chicken. Suffered to be so, the chicken came before the egg. And no way we can generate any type of supposition to believe that the egg will come before the chicken, or try to create shortcuts to be before the chicken. It is impossible. For that reason, this is a creation. This universe is a creation involving the laws of evolution and involution. So we can't get around the laws of involution. The laws of involution operate at the invisible range
the laws of evolution are exactly a printout of the laws of involution at the visible range. As above, so below, as what is visible is operating at the invisible. There is no getting around or surmounting or superseding. It's a balance. The whole thing is called creation. It is the ions in a state of action all the time, producing the phenomena. The Creator himself became his creation, producing all type of illusions in it to give the feeling that we can do the impossible with the possible. Knowing fully well the creation would not be satisfied if it didn't try to fool itself.
Well, there wouldn't be any struggle.
Thank you. So now you understand why he is like that. We don't become God. God became us, but we can become God aware because we are individuality. We are individual sparks of the reality. The one reality is God itself, not a person, but a principle. Yet it will provide personality within the individuality to give it a sense of identification. So it takes on the role of male, female, sperm, ovum, visible, invisible, chicken, egg. But you can't put the cart before the horse. Horse will still have to be in front of the cart. And we're stuck with that. That's why when Jesus said, "None come unto the Father but by me," suffer it to be so. For this is the way of righteousness. We can't not get around the laws that are set up. We can't take the egg before the chicken.
Can you speed up the laws?
No matter how you try to speed up an egg, you couldn't make it produce a chicken before 21 days.
And also, how could you tell when a person's process is speeded up or not? Because if they're always on time...
Imagine if you, the mother of Mary, Mary comes to her mother and says, "Mom, I'm pregnant with God." 1900 years ago in that society, the mother can only say two things. "Honey child, if you're pregnant with God, deliver it tomorrow morning. Then I believe it's from God. After 24 hours, I've got to find your husband, otherwise they're going to stone the hell out of you." And so even Brother Jesus, coming into that particular level, can't speed up nature's laws. I love your desire to do it, but it's like I say, it's trying to put the cart before. We are certain fixations set up to teach us patience. There are three periods in our life that we'll all merge in the delta level. If you're destined to merge at 30 to 35, it'll happen to you. Come hell or high water, that's what you're destined to have. If you're not, between 45 to 65, that's the second period. If you're not, rest for sure it's going to happen to you from 85 on. Because everybody experiences from 85 on till they pass out. The body must experience the cosmic awareness in one each incarnation at some point in time. But it will show when it comes late, the preparation and the appreciation may not be there. If it comes early, we may overdo. If it comes in between, we may have a sense of balance. Yet, great men have come, done more, left more at every one of these states. In the early state, the middle state, and the latter state. That's what the individuality has to offer. It represents the Trinity, plus, minus, neutral, polarity. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. But all these things have their principles for us to work in. Where we fit in is our option. So, as far as your horoscope may show,
You don't know till you go look at it which one of these three levels you're in. But wherever you are, rest assured you'll get it. Because each horoscope is divided 50-50. 50 opposition or resistance and 50% conductance or balance. The conditions are not sequential, they don't come one after the other. They are random. Mm-hmm. But it's break even. So each person is no different in the eyes of God. Because God has set it up that everybody is God. They're playing the fantastic chess game of random and sequence in their lifestyle. They may not like it, but they gotta go through it in some way to appreciate it. And if you do like it, then you've got it forever. Folks, we too have to be heading down the road. If you want anything that we have there in the terms of joy,